Podcast is recording, and David's here, and Dr. Don Clark joins us. Don, a biochemist and a man with a great deal of experience in the pharmaceutical industry, and that will come in particularly handy today. He's a member of the board at Creation Moments. CreationMoments.com is their website. I wanted to alert you to that. And Don, how are things out in Garden Valley, Texas today?
Well, they're probably a little cooler than where you are, but it's hot and hot and hot. We are continuing to get this heat wave, and I think we're projected to get up to 104 today.
Yeah, we got 108 yesterday, so I empathize with you. Did the grapes like heat? I mean, you're surrounded by vineyards
to
there.
A degree. They start shutting down.
To a degree, is that a pun? To what degree?
Yes, to a degree. once the temperature gets above 95, things, it's stressing. It's stressing
yeah.
the grapes.
Well, what do you do about that? Can you put fans in the vineyard, or do you spray them down, mist them? How do you combat the heat?
We just are, watering them, basically.
Okay. All right.
That's about all that we can do without having real expensive equipment.
You need to coddle those grapes so that the wine will come out right. Don, again, we're going to rely on your biochemistry experience and pharmaceutical experience, because last week we talked about the aftermath of COVID vaccines. And to begin with, this time I want to kind of review the whole process since they came into being, just generally, and I'll try not to exaggerate here. But we got word of COVID. It seemed like it was deadly dangerous. People were being hospitalized. They were reporting on numbers every day. There were more and more and more, and there were people dying from this thing. And the Trump administration changed some regulations to allow the pharmaceutical industries to produce a vaccine more quickly, that is free from some of the regulatory things that slowed them down normally, requirements like, animal tests, clinical tests before these products come to market. And the CDC gave emergency authorization to use these vaccines before further testing, which normally would have been done, could be accomplished. And the thing we discovered was that at first the vaccines were touted as preventing the disease, and then it became obvious it didn't prevent the disease, but the vaccine made the symptoms more moderate. And then it was discovered that after 45, 50, 60 days, the vaccine from the original shots was essentially useless. And so you needed boosters. And the CDC has continued, some thought they authorized the vaccines as if they'd been thoroughly tested, but when in fact what they did was to extend the emergency authorization. Is that still what's in force now, the emergency authorization? Because those other clinical, we turned out to be the clinical study, didn't we?
Oh, we're a huge clinical study, yes. The world is the clinical study. It was the FDA that granted the emergency use for these so-called vaccines. the only product that actually has been approved for clinical use, I mean, in the usual sense of a product being approved so far, has been the Pfizer product. But they also continue to hold it under the Emergency Use Authorization Act. So the Pfizer product that's been approved, which is exactly the same one that's being used in people even today.
It's the same thing in booster shots. That's nothing new. There's no new second wave of vaccines. This is all the original stuff still, right?
No, not yet. But the FDA and the pharmaceutical company did it was pulling the wool over, I think, American people's eyes, because while the product was approved, you couldn't find that particular product being administered. It was only the one under experimental use. Now, it was exactly the same product, but it was still it had both authorizations, and so it was during the time when a lot of people were saying, well, wait a minute, we shouldn't be vaccinating all these people. The only group that's really in danger here is the elderly population and those over 70, like myself and you and, you know, some others. The younger folks, they're not, I mean, okay, they get COVID, but there's nothing serious about it. So why are we vaccinating them? And so the FDA did a little trick and said, okay, well, we're approving this. And now people got confused and said, no, the vaccine isn't approved. And yes, technically it was, but guess what? You couldn't find that particular one because you couldn't find a vial with the approved name on it. So therefore, it, you know, for all practical purposes, it wasn't being used. And the reason why it wasn't being used is because under experimental use, you're exempt from any liability of any side effects from the product.
You cannot sue the pharmaceutical company.
You can't sue the pharmaceutical company. Yeah. Because it's experimental. And hey, you know, you agreed to this experimental product. So therefore, you know, if you get harmed by it, then that's on you. That's not on anybody else. And so this even, you know, continues today. So the FDA has recently approved this product even to be used in young, very young children.
Six months and up is what they're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. Well, which is absolutely absurd. Absolutely absurd. There is no reason. Matter of fact, there's a lot of reason not to vaccinate children of that age, but there is absolutely no reason to vaccinate children of that age. So, and actually, there's no reason to vaccinate anybody, like I said, below the age of 70. Really, I mean, if you have health issues, then okay, well, maybe, you know, you can go down into the 50s, but to vaccinate women of childbearing age and young men and men still is there's absolutely no reason to do this. So so now, after, you know, a couple of years here of use, we're having more studies come out to say, oh, wait a minute, there is reason. There is more reason not to vaccinate people because, lo and behold, we're having all of these adverse events. And so since no adequate placebo-controlled clinical studies have been done, except for the initial ones that were done by Pfizer and the other pharmaceutical,
you know,
groups.
What would be interesting now is if they could get a study of those who refused vaccination and compared that group, because that's a large number of people too, and compared it to the group that did get vaccinated, and now there's enough time that's gone by, they should be able to measure after effects. What's cropped up since the vaccination that hasn't cropped up in the unvaccinated, for example. And there's a list of things here. I'm reading an article from the Epoch Times. This is dated, and this was the one you sent us, Don. Here's a list of some of the things that have been happening to people who had been fully vaccinated. Abnormal uterine bleeding, that's menstrual irregularity, is a thousandfold greater. Miscarriages are 50-fold greater. Fetal chromosomal abnormalities are 100-fold greater. And I've begun wondering if this is the mRNA, which does affect your DNA, that they're talking about here. Fetal malformation, 50-fold greater. Fetal cystic hygroma, that's a major malformation, is 90-fold. That means 90 times the normal rate being found in people who have been vaccinated, and the list goes on.
Yes, and it's actually comparing it to influenza vaccines. So it's the coronavirus vaccine group versus influenza vaccine group, and these are from the VARS database, and a careful study was done of that data. Now, the problem with the VARS data is that you could never say absolutely conclusively that the vaccine caused this, from the point of view that this data is just it's not in a clinical study.
And by the way, VARS, just to define it, VARS is V-A-E-R-S, is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that the CDC maintains.
Yes. And so it's doctors and individuals who've had adverse reactions to a vaccine can make a report to this system. And that's the data that has been analyzed. So you're looking at basically two vaccines or two groups of vaccines. One is the influenza vaccines in general, and the other is the COVID vaccines. And those are the numbers that you're quoting.
Okay, so it's COVID compared to influenza vaccines. Yep.
Yes, and this particular study specifically looked at, okay, what's happening with women's health? People should be concerned with women's health. There's been a lot of that in the news these days about, oh, this is all about women's health, and we've been denying women's health. But here we are. We're damaging women, and we're harming their ability to have children, and we're also harming the fetus, the growing fetus in the mother's womb, and we're having all of these adverse reactions that are causing, everything from birth defects to malformities to miscarriages in women, and nobody's raising a red flag about this except, conservative groups and conservative doctors that are doing these studies and saying, hey, we got a big problem here. The basic studies that were supposed to be done, for example, on the last group of patients that you do studies in is women of childbearing age. Most new drugs come out on the market, and they'll say, this can be used for this condition, but it has not been tested in women of childbearing age, so we recommend not to use it in women of childbearing age. Now, this wasn't the case. It was approved for everybody or at least in the emergency use, because again, it's experimental, so we got to find out, if there's problems. But they're not collecting the valid data, other than, the VARS and the Department of Justice, Department of Defense has their own database of their military service personnel, and that's showing exactly the same things as this particular analysis. And so, we didn't do the proper clinical studies because, oh, we want to rush this to the market. We got to get this out to the people to protect the people. So initially we were lied to about the severity of this particular virus. First of all, we were lied to as to which groups were susceptible initially. And one could argue, well, we didn't have the data to really know that it's only the elderly. And even within the elderly, it's only the elderly that have other conditions. If you have an elderly person, and they are, for all practical purposes, healthy and have a decent immune system, they weren't the ones that were dying. It was the ones that were diabetic, they had other conditions, heart conditions, or they had a suppressed immune system for whatever reason. Those were the people that were actually dying. And it's so... even a healthy elderly person was not dying, even if they got the disease. But we vaccinated everybody, and not everybody, of course, took the vaccine. I didn't take it, and you have these reactions now. We talked about last time some of the other reactions in the general population. This happened to be in a subset that is women of childbearing age, and especially women that were pregnant, at the time they got vaccinated. And now we're finding all of these adverse effects. And not surprising, because the proper clinical studies were not done. As we talked about last time, a vaccine, again, they had to change the definition of a vaccine and what it meant to be vaccinated in order to accommodate these new mRNA products. A vaccine is supposed to protect you against a particular disease. And as you pointed out, initially in this program, they said that it protected people from the disease, but
there's a cultural thing here, too. If it's called a vaccine, you tend to have confidence in it, because we've had experience with vaccines. It goes back a couple hundred years. Inoculations and vaccines have been going on since the 18th century. So if it's vaccine, it must be okay.
It must be good, and it must have been tested. And we're finding out now. Even the original FISA data, for example, on the quote mRNA vaccine, the reason why they didn't want to release that to folks was because it showed these conditions that are now quite prevalent in the population. It showed all the inflammation problems. It showed some of the enhancement of cancer that we talked about last time. It showed some of these issues with women. And so that data alone should have been enough to say, wait a minute, we better take this cautiously. But we went full steam ahead and we banned anybody on not only social media but regular media who was waving the red the red flags and warning people, hey, these aren't as safe as you think they are. They're not doing what you think they're doing. And so now we have people who have been vaccinated, have been boosted multiple times, and they're having long-term effects from these vaccines.
I have a question for you. My son, he's 30. He'll be 34 this year. Contracted COVID a week ago, and reported some very uncomfortable symptoms. He's been very sick for 2, 3, 4 days. And he was worried about us because he knows we haven't gotten the full vaccine set. And so he said, do that, and 'cause I love you, and take care of yourselves, because this is not nice stuff. And he said, there are plenty of antiviral remedies for you. And so we wrote back and said, well, I assume that you're getting those. And I'm thinking monoclonal antibodies is the big thing. And he wrote back and he said, no, I'm too young. That's reserved only for elderly. So they've got a drug out there that can relieve the symptoms even in younger people, but it's not available to younger people. What gives here?
What gives is the Biden administration. Under the Trump administration, you could get the monoclonal. As a matter of fact, Trump himself took the monoclonal antibodies.
That's true.
It was readily available in Texas, in Florida, and Biden comes on and says, "Oh, you can't have this anymore." And they
rationed the doses available to the states, did they not?
They rationed the doses, yes, yeah. And they rationed the doses away from the red states. There's nothing political about that. So left those states to say, well, and then they took the monoclonal antibodies off completely for a period of time, and it sounds like they are probably back not on the market, but back being used again for
You can't just run out and buy them. You have to have a prescription. A doctor has to administer it, right?
Well, they'd be pretty expensive anyway. You're talking about probably $2,000, $3,000 a dose if you had to buy it. Mm-hmm. But if it was state supplied or federal supplied, then it was either free, if you were under Medicare, or a very low price of a couple hundred dollars or so. So, but monoclonal antibodies is obviously one thing, but the monoclonal antibodies were against the original, COVID-19. We are far beyond that now. We're, at Omicron, plus. So we've got all kinds of
variants,
variants, since that time, which is why vaccines against coronaviruses don't work, because of the variations that get generated, once the initial virus gets out there, it mutates quite rapidly and tries to figure out, it's not that it's got any intelligence in it, but it quickly mutates to survive, and guess what? Those people who have been vaccinated, they're not protected anymore, really.
I've read so much about this, I'm starting to confuse all the information I've tried to assimilate here, but one of the things that stands out is that the claim that those who have been vaccinated are actually more susceptible to the variants than people who are unvaccinated. Is that accurate?
That seems to be the case, yes. And so, and why is that? Is because it's shutting down the vaccines are shutting down your killer T cells, and the more you get vaccinated, the more the killer T cells, the first line of defense basically gets shut down, the more you are vulnerable to getting the COVID. Now, I have to admit, I got COVID last week too.
So no,
it wasn't only your son.
Oh, congratulations.
I got COVID.
Nah.
But, I was able to I didn't get the monoclonal antibody. I did feel, I had no energy. I was sleeping most of the day. And it affected me pretty badly for 3 days. And but I got started on hydroxychloroquine and zinc. I started taking zinc and vitamin C. Of course, I was already taking vitamin A, and so I knew my vitamin A levels were high enough. I just started doing that, and by the end of the third day, I started to feel better, and I started to have energy again. And so I kind of took it easy over the weekend. And I'm not 100%. I still have some congestion, but here I am, a 72-year-old man who, and I definitely got COVID because I tested, I used the Chinese test, that the government gave out. And I hadn't used those, so I still had some available. I tested on the second day, and it was very faint. I had a very, very faint reaction. And but by the third day, it was extremely strong. That yes, okay, I got a COVID band there, and there's no denying it. It was even stronger than the control band. So. I definitely, I didn't get a PCR test or anything like that.
What's the best defense then? Is it strengthening your own immune system? And how do you know the state? How do you analyze the state of your immune system currently so you know what to take? To take zinc and vitamin C and other things to develop a useful, proper vitamin regimen for yourself. How do you start?
It'd
be a blood test, wouldn't it?
Well, you do blood testing for vitamin D, so that's what I've been doing. Every 6 months, I take a vitamin D. I do a vitamin D blood test, and I send it off the Grassroots. I think it's grassroots.org, you can participate in their ongoing clinical study of vitamin D. And you can measure your vitamin D levels, because you don't know how much vitamin D. Just because you're taking 5,000 units of vitamin D doesn't mean that you're up at the 50 nanograms per mil of vitamin D in your blood that you need to be taking. So I started off with 50, and then I found out that, gee, this is only getting me to 30 nanograms per mil. And so I boosted my vitamin D levels to 10,000 units. And that, between that and getting enough sunshine, now I'm up at the 70 nanograms per mil.
Chips,
so
you
I've got enough vitamin D.
You can get too much vitamin D, can't you?
It's hard. It really is hard. You could take 100,000 units and probably still not get enough, because the adverse events don't start happening until you get up to over 200 nanograms per mil. And so the protective range is between basically 40 and 60 nanograms per mil. But even higher levels, if you go to 70, 80, you're still okay. Like I said, the adverse events the grassroots website that I referred to gives you has studies on all of this, and as to, well, gee, I've heard that taking too much vitamin D could be dangerous, and so they answer the question and what the end quote the beginning of the danger level is, and so that's why you need to get your blood tested. That's the safest and best way. Just get your blood tested from time to time. And you've got enough vitamin D. So vitamin D is very important to a lot of systems in your body. The other things that are important is as we've talked about before, not eating a lot of sugar. Sugar suppresses the immune system, so you don't want to eat a lot of sugar. Or drink soft drinks which has sugar, not only sugar, but high fructose corn syrup, which is even worse than eating just regular sugar. And so you want to stop that. You want to get a little exercise. You want to get some sun. You want to eat fruits and vegetables, preferably fresh fruits and vegetables. Get that in your diet. You want to get some omega-3s in your diet by eating wild salmon, for example, has a lot of vitamin, has omega-3s. In general, you want to lead a healthy lifestyle. Obviously, if you're obese, then that's going to affect your immune system. And if you're diabetic, of course, you can't do anything about it other than control your sugar. And that's really what you need to do. But for the most part, just eat a reasonable diet, and get your vitamin A, take vitamin C. If you don't have that, make sure you got enough minerals and various things.
Well, I know zinc is a key here too, isn't it?
Zinc is the key, and I had reduced my zinc levels to not very much, and then I got sick, and then I boosted it up to 50 milligrams per day, and even 100 milligrams per day while I had COVID, and I think that with the hydroxychloroquine knocked it out. Because the hydroxychloroquine, if you just take hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, it doesn't matter. Ivermectin has additional properties than hydroxychloroquine, in that ivermectin actually binds to the virus itself, whereas hydroxychloroquine acts like ionophore, which helps get zinc into your cells.
How do you get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin?
Well, you got to find a doctor who will prescribe it. And there's a lot of, there's a lot of doctors now in Texas who will prescribe it, because they know that, hey, there are enough studies have been done to show that this is viral protection. You could have a common cold and still, benefit from these things, because it's the same mechanism. The virus gets into your cells and multiplies and bursts open, and, it multiplies even more. And so if you can knock the virus out in the infected cells by getting the zinc, which is the the mechanism. It's not the hydroxychloroquine so much, it's the zinc that is causing the protection.
Okay, now there is an alternative that's recommended to us still and required in some places. And it's much simpler than all those vitamins and all that research. Put a piece of cloth across your nose and your mouth, and you'll be fine, right?
Wrong. Okay, So there's been a new study that's come out. That's a little segue there.
Yeah, it is.
So there's been a new study that's come out to say that, all this mask wearing really wasn't a good idea after all. And for two reasons. I mean, we've been saying that, gee, the pore size in the masks, for one thing, is like a mosquito going through a chain link fence. The chain link fence is not going to stop the mosquito. And so the mask is not going to stop the virus from being spread. However, what the mask does is, one, it increases the carbon dioxide that you breathe in. In other words, every time you breathe out carbon dioxide. And so every time you have a mask on, it suppresses some of that carbon dioxide, so you rebreathe it in. So you get hypoxia because you're breathing in carbon. And the more effective the mask is, the worse this problem is, that you're going to breathe in more carbon dioxide. The other problem is you get little droplets on the inside of the mask, and those droplets are a haven for bacteria and fungus, as well as if you have the virus, it's going to enhance the reinfection rate for you to, get the virus. So the studies have been shown that, hey, those regions of the country or those counties, for example, with even a given state that had the mask mandates and those that made it optional, those counties had more infections than those counties that didn't have the mask mandates. So the actual end result was that there's a deleterious effect of you wearing these masks. So the best recommendation, unless you're coughing and sneezing and, it's more of a protection against other people from these droplets. But if you think that it's going to stop the coronavirus or any type of virus from getting through that mask, you're sadly mistaken. And we've been fooled yet again by the CDC.
Mm. Well, I guess you could sum it up by saying we've been hornswoggled, huh?
We've been hornswoggled. We've been bamboozled, so.
Do your research. There's a lot of this research that's turning out adverse information that says the vaccines are dangerous, more dangerous than they are helpful. I have yet to hear that science refuted. Instead, they bludgeon the doctors and the scientists who are reporting this stuff. They don't counteract or countermand that or contradict the research.
Yeah, and they banned you from social media. So, and of course, the mainstream media is not talking about this, any of this stuff. So you gotta search on alternative media sites. And I'm not talking about far right, wing sites. I'm just talking about good health sites that actually, have this information and well scientifically documented information that can be useful to you.
Okay. Well, it's good that we've been able to I'll put links to three of the articles. There's already one in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. I'll put two other articles, one on the masks, recent research, and the other on some of the bad things happening to women of reproductive age in particular, and fetuses as a result of the vaccine. So those will be available to you in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. Another thing you can do when you're there is to link to creationmoments.com. Creationmoments.com is a reservoir, a library of information, scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. And we recommend that. And, of course, mention that Dr. Don is are you still vice chair or vice chair of the board there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, it's a great organization with some good sound information for you. Don, thanks so much for the update. And we'll look forward to speaking with you again next Tuesday. Have a good week.
You too.
Glad you, bounced back from COVID. That didn't take long at all, did it? 3 days.
No, but I was wiped out. I mean, I was literally wiped out for 3 days. It's nothing to sneeze at, but at the same time, we can beat this thing with our natural immunity and the help of some of these other drugs that advice. I mentioned.
Don, we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
See you next week, Don.
Yes.